It's no secret that we're living in a cost of living crisis. Rents are rising and it's getting harder and harder to find places to call home. I see the struggle amongst my friends and friends of friends, families, young renters all over the place. Some moving home if they are unable to find a house after attending home open after home open every weekend to no avail. But that seems to be a good outcome. More than 4 in 5 renters are in housing stress, with homelessness the leading impact of the housing crisis. A report by National Housing Campaign Everybody's Home has just revealed this. Everybody's Home is a national campaign to fix the housing crisis, launched in 2018 by a coalition of housing, homelessness and welfare organisations to achieve the change needed so everybody has a safe and decent place to live. Pretty reasonable, it seems. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Are you struggling with finding a rental or housing stress at the moment? 0405 921 921 is how you can let me know. May Azizi, a spokesperson for the campaign handing down the Brutal Reality Report, says the human cost of the housing crisis and inaction is grim. The housing crisis is pushing ordinary people to the brink, with more people facing uncertainty, anxiety and hardship. May Azizi joins us on breakfast this morning. Good morning, May.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to have you. Can you tell us a little bit about what prompted the report? What made you want to get into sort of looking into this?
Well, we know that for years we've been seeing housing costs go up, especially for renters. Over the last 3 years, rents have gone up by 37%, which is huge. And they're forecast to go up by another 10%. And you hear this and you think, how can that be? Because there's only so much that people can afford to pay. We know that wages aren't going up by 30% every 3 years. So we wanted to better understand how people are coping with it, and the results are grim, as you say.
It's definitely terrible and scary to think of the results that are impacting. Can you tell us about the statistics that were discovered? I've just obviously said that 4 in 5 renters are in crisis and finding that hard, but what else has the report really looked into and discovered?
So we surveyed 750 community members, and we found that 2/3 of them were in housing stress. And as you say, when you look at renters, that number goes up. It becomes 4 in 5 for renters, over 80%. And what that means is that people don't have enough money after paying the rent to do things like put food on the table, pay their bills, certainly not save for the future or plan for the future. And in fact, 3/4 of people in our survey, or 75%, told us that they were really worried about their financial security for the future and what it meant for them for the future. 2/3 told us that was having a huge impact on their mental health. And that's not surprising, because in most parts of the country, your landlord can evict you for no reason, they can raise the rent for no reason, there are no limits on rent increases, and so people struggle with that precarity. They don't know where they're going to live in a year's time, they don't know whether their rent is going to go up in the next couple of months, and they can't plan for it.
We know that some states and territories have tried to, limit rent increases, but those measures haven't really impacted in the way that they have hoped, right? What has happened in terms of thinking about rent increases or limiting them?
There's only one part of the country that has a limit on rent increases, and that's the ACT. There's a limit there on rent increases for more than 10% of CPI. That's actually a fairly modest measure, but it's the only one that exists in the country. There are other parts of the country that are doing things like limiting the frequency of rent increases, but that's not the same as limiting rent increases themselves. It just means that your landlord can increase your rent once a year. It doesn't say that they can't do an unreasonable rent increase. It doesn't spell out what that means. It doesn't limit the amount that they can increase it by. And most renters will tell you their rent is only going up about once a year anyway. So there's really only one part of the country that has any kind of limit on rent increases.
What would a reasonable rent increase restriction or a measure around that action look like? What would that look like for governments looking to put in structures like this, or places like looking to put in restrictions like this?
Linking it to CPI would be a good step. What's happening in the ACT is a good example. As I said, the only real example of a limit that we've got in the country. There's been a lot of discussion about a rent freeze, but really a rent cap. Promoting the idea of long-term leases and suggesting to landlords that they can't increase the rent during that lease. Those are the sorts of things that we'd be looking at, not just saying you can only raise the rent once a year because that doesn't functionally do anything, but actually just limiting the amount that rents can go up by.
The federal government's Housing Australia Future Fund, really, it does provide housing, but does it provide enough housing?
What the Housing Australia Future Fund does is offer incentives for institutional investors to invest in community housing providers. So it's a pretty roundabout way. It's a roundabout way to build houses, to invest in houses. They're projecting that they will build somewhere between 9,600 homes over the next 5 years up to 30,000 homes at the higher end. To give you a sense of what we need to be building 30,000 homes every single year to end our social housing shortfall.
Wow.
With a shortfall of 640,000. So this fund, sure, we'd like to see it passed. I wouldn't want to get in between one of those 9,600 people who could get a home in the next 5 years and something that this fund could build, but it is not a plan to end Australia's social housing shortfall. If all the government does is go ahead with this fund, the shortfall will get worse over the next 5 years.
The report also looked into the effect that this is having on renters' mental health, looking at 2/3 of renters saying that the accommodation crisis was affecting their mental health. What kind of figures and what kind of affect did you find in this survey when you surveyed these people? How did they speak about their mental health in regards to the rental crisis?
They spoke about precarity. The big thing here is uncertainty, anxiety, particularly for older people. There were a lot of older people in our survey who are finding it really hard to be in the private rental market after they've retired because the pension is a fixed income. And when rents are going up by 37% over 3 years, another 10% over the next year, your pension is not going up by anything like that. And they're really worried about what it means. Nobody wants to be share housing in their 70s or 80s. And it's very difficult for people to get new or more income at that stage in their life. Even if they're able to work physically, they might face all kinds of age discrimination that makes it hard for them to get work. So it's grim out there, and there are more lifelong renters than ever, but the laws around renting don't really treat it as though it's something that's a permanent tenure.
What we see is this really, as an extension of this is an impact that's resulting in homelessness, right? So we're seeing more homelessness as a direct impact of this. How have the homelessness figures, come through this survey? How have you discovered more about what's leading into homelessness through this survey?
So we surveyed organisations who support people on the front line of this crisis, and what they told us, 9 out of 10 of them told us that their caseload is growing, that it's becoming more complicated, and they also told us that their own staff are burning out and considering leaving the sector, which is a real problem because these organisations are already under an enormous amount of pressure. Government figures show that 1 in 3 homelessness services has to turn away people seeking help just because demand is so high.
What's the best way to think about this, to think about the way that we can free up social housing and cheaper rentals, and what do we need to do to think about actions that we can take about helping this crisis or resolving or working towards resolving it and providing more housing?
The most important thing the federal government could be doing is building social and public housing. So the federal government, 1 in 4 homes that was built right up until the mid-80s in Australia was actually built by the government. Social housing used to be about 1 in 10 homes that was out there. At the moment, it's about 1% of new builds social housing. So it's not surprising when the government has completely stepped back from its responsibilities to house people that we've got an affordability crisis because it's being completely left to the private sector. So we really need the federal government to step up and make a plan to build social housing.
There's a $2 billion social housing accelerator that's been announced by Housing Minister Julie Collins, talking about Housing Australia Future Fund and all of that and how that's going to make a difference. Would you like to see more of that, or would you like to see an extension on that kind of fund? And what positive actions are you hoping to come out of that kind of investment?
That's the kind of investment we really need. It's a lot more significant than the Housing Australia Future Fund, for example. It is an on-budget investment. It's not... the Housing Australia Future Fund is like an investment fund that generates profits, and some years it will generate profits and sometimes it won't, and sometimes it will be able to deliver housing and sometimes it won't. What we need is the federal government to do this kind of investment, $2 billion every single year, right? That's what we need to see them do. So that's great. And that they did it this year, we need to see that happen every single year.
We can see that the solutions like that you're presenting seem pretty clear, pretty obvious. What do people need to do now? What is the direct action from understanding what the solutions are and learning how to put them in practice? What do we need to do now?
We need the government to step up, right? There's a lot of well-intentioned people who are like, oh, you know, what can I do? Should we be refurbishing office space or, you know, whatever? There is no way to end this crisis without the federal government coming to the table. This is a sector where there are a lot of people with, you know, great ideas about tiny homes or what have you, but at the end of the day, there is no way to solve this crisis at the scale it's going, that it needs to be solved out without the federal government coming to the table, putting money in. And so if there are listeners out there who are thinking about what they can do, I would say write to your local MP, write to your local paper, and tell them that this is something that you care about, because we can't do it without the federal government.
Thank you so much for joining us on Breakfast this morning, May Azizi. It's a real pleasure, and it's definitely important that we understand the actions that can take place and what's going on, because sometimes this information can be diluted and misunderstood. So thank you so much for taking the time to unpack it with us.
Thanks so much.
That was May Azizi from Everybody's Home. They've just released the Brutal Reality Report, which is looking at all sorts of rental crisis and homeowner crisis. It's reaching into mortgagees, it's reaching into elderly, young people, and it's impacting the level of homelessness we're seeing in this country. It's an important conversation to have, and a pleasure to have it on Breakfast this morning.